Welcome to the Healthcare Plus podcast, hosted by Quint Studer and Dan Collard. I'm Nicole Webb-Bode, partner at Healthcare Plus Solutions Group. Thank you for joining us as we bring together leaders and changemakers from across the healthcare industry. In each high-impact segment, you'll hear about the latest challenges organizations are facing and learn how guests are rewiring solutions to drive real change. Plus, you'll walk away from each episode with practical tools, techniques, and best practices to implement in your own role and in your organization. For more information on your host or to listen to recent episodes of the podcast, please visit www.healthcareplussg.com/podcast. Now, here's your host, Quint Studer, who will introduce you to our next guest.
All right. Well, this is Quint Studer. Welcome to Healthcare Plus Podcast. And I'm so excited today to have an old friend and current friend, Mark Slider. And Mark's going to introduce himself, the hospital he's at. And I've known Mark for many years. And I'll get into that right after he tells you a little bit about him. So, Mark, why don't you tell our listeners exactly who you are and where you're currently working?
Well, thank you, Quint. I appreciate that. I'm currently with Common Spirit Health. I'm with the Dignity Health Division, which is the western part of the country. I'm in the Arizona market, the Greater Phoenix market. I run the East Valley market. I got a couple large hospitals there, some urgent cares, lots of physicians, about 4,500 or so employees or so. So pretty decent size operation. And we've been able to do some pretty creative stuff in the last 3 or 4 years around high reliability and then advancing components of what I would call the components of hardware and excellence taken to the next phase or the next evolution. So really proud of that.
Well, you should be too, Mark. I became reacquainted with Mark. I did a thing with Catherine Meese for ACHE in Austin, Texas, and ran into Mark, and we talked. And right about the time I was getting ready to release Rewiring Excellence, and we were talking about the fact that I loved what he did. So many people, and I saw a COO put a quote up the other day that said, "In healthcare, we'll continue to do the same things even when it quits working." and you know, as I've traveled the country, people, and I like the fact they like Hardwiring Excellence. And I like the fact that there's certain things that are timeless, but there's also times you got to change. Yeah. And I love what you've done is I think you took a lot of it and made it much, much better. You know, you took an original recipe and made it really, really good. And I think one of the terms you call is excellence every day in every way. So, you know, you're a person that's been in healthcare for a while, but you're not afraid to change things up. So when you look at that, why don't you tell people what excellence every day, every way is and what you've been able to do with it?
Sure. Like I mentioned before, it's built on a high reliability organization background. So real focused in on safety. And that's where we started to focus all of our efforts and improve safety. But we found that rounding, huddles, universal skills, you know, all of those basic components, many of those found in Hardwiring Excellence as well, were certainly translatable to better outcomes in patient experience, better outcomes in quality, better outcomes in employee engagement. So we took a team and kind of backed up a little bit and really took a comprehensive approach and said, what do we need to do to make sure that all of our outcomes are more reliable? So there's three components of excellence every day, every way. The first component is something that will be nothing new to anyone on the call here, on the podcast here, and that's consistent behaviors. So we had to take, you know, standard behaviors, and we had to better define them. We had to better link them to the values and make sure that whatever we were doing was connecting to purposeful, worthwhile work. All of us know how important those components is. And that's one that was important 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 50 years ago, just as important, if even more so today. So that's the first component. The second component, we had areas where we need to invest and innovate and enhance. So we did. We took a step back and we said, "What? Hey, listen, this nurse manager, they've got 100 direct reports. How much rounding are they doing? How realistic is it for them to be able to see every patient that we ask them to see?" So we actually took a step back and made some evaluations of that and made some investments in those particular areas. And I'll talk a little bit more about each one of those, because we invested in technology to help them out. We invested in nurses, what we call care coaches on the units, to help them out. We helped them in discharge planning and discharge guides to help them out. Just many different components, and we'll dive into that a little bit later. But the third component was to make sure that we communicate and tell our story. So we did that through messaging. And the best way to do that in messaging is to be consistent. So we called all of our high reliability and excellence journey, excellence every day, every way. We did a little brand. We made sure that it's all over our hospitals. We tied in our recognition systems to it, tied it into our values. Everything that, if you come to our hospitals, you can't miss seeing different things that remind you of what's the most important, and that's our patients and delivering excellence. So those are the three major components of excellence every day, every day.
And for our listeners, I know you're already saying, how do I learn more? So Mark will give you how to get more in contact. I am so lucky because I have it all right in front of me. And one of the things I want to start with is the first bucket you talked about, the standards of behavior. Because what we've learned in organizations, there's a big correcting them or developing. You make a big deal. Everybody signs them. And then slowly, 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 it gets a little looser. And then all of a sudden, it just was something we did at one time. And you have really dug deep into how is consistent behaviors achieved. I've got a 6-point system here, how it's constantly delivered. Can you go into detail on that one?
Well, you know, I've learned over the years being in organizations is that you adapt to each organization. And so if they all the good things that they already have in place, values, mission, and in some cases, they do have some remnants of standards of behaviors. And if not, you just develop those. In our organization, we were very rich in values. We're a faith-based organization. So the values were strong. They just had not said, what does living that value mean? And described it in more detail, which is a standards of behavior. And so we made sure that our standards of behaviors were our 6 values within our organization. So there wasn't anything new to talk about with staff. That was already something that they already resonated with for, you know, purpose. And then we, as good practice, Quint, we did this a long time ago, but we went and talked to staff. And we asked them to help us describe what that behavior would look like in each of those values. And they helped us finalize what became the standards of behavior. And then we applied it the same way we've done in the past. We made sure we hired and selected to those standards. We do our recognition that way through the standards. We do our evaluations, all of those different things that help reinforce those components.
No, that's phenomenal. Just for the listeners, for your values are compassion, inclusion, integrity, excellence, collaboration. And as I look through them, then you have standards of behavior for compassion or inclusion, integrity, excellence, collaboration, and sort of tells I will. So I think you've turned them into doable, actionable steps. So it's not just vague guessing. And I love, again, people, this is audio, your visuals are incredible. You know, excellence every way, every day, every way, behaviors consistently delivered. But then you have the how-to. And so what I find, I mean, this is a book here, Mark. You've got to write a book on this. because once you know, people say, well, I like the writing, but how do you do it? And you just sort of touched on that. You aligned them to goals and behavior, how you selected, how you develop people, recognize and communicate. I mean, this has been phenomenal how you put this together.
Well, it's again, it's components, a majority of the components from hardwiring excellence and other evidence-based information that we have available to us, and we just tried to apply it that way. And we didn't try to make it too complicated.
No, I love it. No, if I'm an employee, I can read this and I can understand exactly what living integrity is. You know, I can understand what excellence is. I will practice and reliably apply the universal skills of our culture excellence every day, everywhere. Collaboration. I will assume positive intent and act in the best interest of all. I mean, it sort of connects it, which allows me to reward and recognize people doing it. Coach. I always assume people are not following on purpose, helping coach people to do it. And then when it comes time to correct people if they're not doing it. But you made it very clear, because one of the challenges I find with standards is they're a little vague. People say, well, it's hard to judge them. And you have objective measurement in here that's, again, the best I've ever seen, Mark.
Well, we try to, we have really good universal skills that we put in place for our high reliability organization. And we wanted to make sure we had something similar from the behavioral standpoint. So that's why we got a little bit more granular and specific on what that would look like from the behavior piece, because we knew that we had the success in high reliability with those universal skills by reinforcing those through our rounding and huddles and other things. We knew we could do the same on behaviors if they were done in the same manner.
Well, so again, now let's look at the second thing you mentioned, which was, I think I would consider this under the invest, enhance, and innovate part. And I really loved, because I was in the process of writing Rewiring or just finishing it when you and I talked. And I just love the fact that you're willing to challenge the status quo. And not everybody is willing to challenge the status quo, specifically when you've been as successful as you. It's not like you're in a turnaround. You've been very successful. So I love the invest, enhance, and innovate, because that's a question I get from CEOs a lot of time. They have internal coaches that might not be working where they thought, might not be getting the results. You took a whole new approach to this. You want to share with our listeners?
Yeah, well, first, when I've done this in other organizations in the past, it wasn't as comprehensive. And there is a reluctance, and all of us have really tight budgets, and we really are look at any type of improvement, and we don't want to add any additional investment. But the fact of the matter is, if you really want better outcomes, you have to make that some type of investment. And we did a full-blown investment in this, and we targeted at a specific return, a better return in growth, a better return in finance, a better return on our outcomes. And we knew if we made that investment, we could, and we have generated that return and then some. But it was focused in first on technology. So we were already working with a vendor that was helping. I don't know if our listeners out there have any issues with the adoption of their patient portal, and the patients actually getting in there and their loved ones getting in there and actually using it. We just really have less than probably 20% or less of folks actually using that patient portal. So we had a more user-friendly company kind of interface that and do a really much better job of engaging patients. By the time they hit the emergency department, we get them enrolled in that and they get on their devices, and it's two-way communication. And it was a way that we can keep regular communication and take some things off the nurse, you know, by doing that, they could say, if they needed a blanket or they needed a glass of water or some of those types of things, they could actually do that on it through this technology. And then a different resource, not the nurse, could help come in and help with those components, so the nurse could focus in on, you know, a higher level of clinical activity. So that was the first piece. The second piece was the investment in what we ended up calling care coaches, which in essence was a nurse. So I don't know if a lot of you, the listeners out there have, and I'm not giving you any type of prescription here. I'm just saying we invested in a lot of people that did analysis on patient experience reports and did analysis on quality and analysis on this. And so we looked at those folks and said, hey, those coordinators and analysis, could we redeploy some of those resources and put nurses on the floors, our busiest units. And so we did. We said, you know what? We're going to take a step back here and we're going to put a nurse on. At that time, it was about 13 of our busiest units. And we gave the CNOs and all the nursing leadership, we said, define what this person does. That they would go around and coach and support. They would help out in the rounding. They would shadow round some of our nurses and help coach them up. So it's real-time development, all, you know, on the units all the time. And then they own the unit. And so each unit has the care coaches. And then we looked at the discharges, because the discharges is one where we couldn't get communication at discharge. We had discharge phone calls, but this is one again where, you know, we've done discharge phone calls, but they weren't getting us the return that we had when we first started the discharge phone calls 15 to 20 years ago. And so we got a company that worked with us. It's called Guideway Care, and they actually are a supporting component of the discharge phone calls. We put all our protocols in place. They actually help us with readmissions and some other things too. But those first 7 days, by the time the discharge, to the time they get their patient experience feedback survey, they are four times they're connected, either through text or calls, just to make sure that the patients have what they need. And if they don't, we still have the nurses that did the discharge phone calls available, but now all they focus in on is escalations. So that's the care guides. And then the other piece, we did go to unit-based hospitalists. So we changed the care model so that each unit had a unit-based hospitalist, a care coach, of course, their nurse manager, and collectively they get together and they own those units. And that was a big deal for our hospitalists. It took us about a year or more to fine tune that process. And then we kept on doing the other best practices. So the hourly rounding, we tweaked it up a little bit, but the nurse manager rounding, leadership rounding, all of those huddles, all those other components we kept in place as care practices. But these other three or four components really took us to the next level.
I think you made it doable. And yeah. I think you have to look at that. You know, we're talking again, before I got on this call, we were talking to an organization we're working with where the nurse has 54 beds. Now, what are the odds of her rounding on 54 patients? And you put her or he in a position of possibly an integrity question, because, you know, they're supposed to be documenting and, you know, they feel the pressure and then it doesn't work. So I think what you've done is you've made things doable. And the other thing, Mark, about you, which I think is just superb, is you see these as investments, not expenses. And I think that's what I notice. I notice great CEOs understand the cause and effect. So you understood. So why don't you, for the listeners, talk just about, not all of them, because you have a whole list here. I've got lists and graphs. Talk about some of the outcomes, because they're going to say, well, what did you get out of this when you added the care coach, the care advisor, the, you know, unit-based hospitalist?
Well, first was safety was the first pieces. And now we have both hospitals have achieved zero harm. That's 365 days without a serious safety event for those that are on the higher liability journey. That's huge. There's no other hospital in Common Spirit Health, which is 140 hospitals, that has achieved zero harm. One of our hospitals has achieved it three times in the last 6 years. And I'm very proud to say in this last year, our largest, most complex level one trauma center achieved it about 5 days ago, which we've got some celebrating to do. So we're very excited about that.
Safety. That alone makes the, you've just returned a year turnaround multiple times just with that.
No question. But what we also got was patient experience. We, our largest hospital, could not just get out of the 30th, 40th percentile. And we tried all the best practices, and they just weren't delivering what they had in the past. So once we put this investment in place and some of these others that we mentioned, it's now in the 88th percentile. It's been the 80th percentile for the last, over the last year. Our other hospital was in the 60th, 70th percentile, But it would go down to the 50th and go back to the 80th and the 50th. I mean, it was just VTAC all over the place. Now it's consistent in the 90th percentile. So we're the top hospitals in Common Spirit Health, 140 hospitals in Common Spirit Health, and just really proud of that piece. Again, that one would probably warrant making the investment. But that wasn't it. I mean, our employee engagement got even better. It was already strong to begin with, but now our employee engagement is number one and number three in entire Common Spirit Health. One of our hospitals, number one, one of them's number three. So it's just, and our retention is fantastic. We're in the 88% retention rate, 89% nursing. I don't think too many places can say that. So our just the culture, tying this back to purpose, they knew exactly why we were doing this, and they believed in this as well as we did, and that helped with employee engagement. And all of that led to, of course, better finances. I mean, the word's out. We've gotten great growth. Our financials are really, really strong. Some of the strongest in our company. And we're just really proud of all of those components. And it did pay off. I will say we added this up. This was no small investment. I think we invested about $6,000 a bed. You guys can do the math in your own organizations, but we've already exceeded about the return. We've made some initial analysis of this, and we've returned over $12,000 a bed. So you can see the math really works, but you have to be fully committed, and you have to be committed to that on the front end, because there's a lot of learning, development, skill building, some investments where that you have to make up front to get that out of the back end.
Well, you know, we just of course, talked about the study that we funded with the ANA on the care model study. Catherine Meese and I have a book coming out on trust, a human margin. And you hit so many points. You know, one of the things we're finding, and it could be COVID, other things, is there seemed a lack of trust in senior leadership, a lack of feeling, am I getting organizational support, and a lack of feeling, does this organization care about my well-being? Everything you mentioned hits those three over and over and over again. And the other thing that's really fascinating on the care model study, particularly when there's so many new nurses that have entered our inpatient units, particularly, they're so wanting help. And I know they believe what I hear, you didn't put these people in staffing, you gave them availability to support, because these people are lifelines to those new nurses. And I think what you've done is just phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, we are getting ready to publish this as well, Quint. So we hope to, and it just a little preview, it was statistically significant. It was just the care coaches alone demonstrated a very nice return and better outcomes. So we're pleased with that.
So the third component you talked about, which I think is, again, we talk about this all the time, is the communication, the framing of it. So it doesn't look like some senior leader schmooze program or some, you know, sound bites. I think you've really built solid communication throughout the system on a real value-based way. You want to talk about how you sort of did that?
Well, I learned this actually from you, Quint, about 20 plus years ago, when I went to Baptist and toured around, it was all over. It was very clear what was the most important things to that organization. You had regular meetings, you had forums, you walked the halls, and you could see it. And you went to the departments and you saw their boards, communication boards, and what was reinforced. So this is just taking that piece, fundamental piece, and just making sure it was consistent throughout our hospitals. We had a consistent, we put a brand to it, a logo to it. So when people visually could see this, you know, what's the most important things. We put it on our recognition pins, so that they saw that our values were there, that our excellence every day was on the pins. We have now we are every unit, just like you did at Baptist, has their own communication boards. And excellence every day, every way is right on the front of that, along with their standards of behavior and other components are surrounding their communication boards in how they communicate. And then we talk about this when we walk around. It's a component of our universal skills, our standards of behaviors. And so it's prevalent all throughout hospital. You cannot miss coming into our hospital what is the most important things to us visually and through our actions.
I appreciate that. No, I think Don Dean years ago taught me when I was working at Holy Cross and we started this journey, how aggressively you've got to keep things in front of people because there's so much going on and you have to keep something. I love your, you know, the excellence every day, every way. It's sort of like years ago, I heard a speaker talk and he talked about excellence speaks and, you know, and it's sort of, again, their theme was excellence speaks. So you see it, you feel it. And you've taken what I've done way beyond anything I've ever done, but I'm just absolutely in awe of what you've done in your leadership. And, you know, I hope through this podcast, other people hear it and contact you if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
How you've done it. So as we wrap up, how can people learn a little bit more about how you've done it?
Well, probably the easiest way, I'm on LinkedIn. So please, all of this information is on LinkedIn and that's at markslider.com. So MarkSlyter.com will go to my LinkedIn page and it has all the documentation. You can print this stuff out yourselves. This is something, and I think Quint, you and others have championed, and I'd like to do the same, is that I don't own this stuff. This is ideas that have enhanced care and outcomes, and I want to share it. So please, you can find it there. You also find out there an ability to email me and contact me as well. You can also get a hold of me through commonspirit.org or through Dignity Health.
Well, you've done a marvelous job. Again, I was so glad to see you again in Austin, Texas, and it's been a real gift. And I it's so amazing because I was just talking to an organization today. They were struggling with what they call internal coaching. You know, we got these internal coaches and right. Your whole care model, the care coach, the care advisor, it's just really superb. But, you know, it takes courage, Mark. And I think maybe we gain it as we get wins or feel successful. But I was interviewed at George Washington University and they asked me about CEOs, what separates CEOs? And I said, well, I think some points are, I think the CEOs are most successful seeing skill building as an investment. I think those that see as an expense don't have near the success as those that see as an investment. Now, it's got to be a good investment. It just can't be invest in training. You've really synchronized this in a very laser-like focus way. And for those people listening, this ain't no, it's hard no matter what size organization you're in. But you're in a pretty big organization, almost 4,500 employees.
Almost 5,000 employees. And it's a big market as well. 1.5 million population just in the market that we're in. Of course, Phoenix is much bigger than that, but it is. And what I will say, too, is that we didn't just do it at one hospital. So this isn't just you had a special team at one hospital or a special situation. You remember the things that you all, the excuses, Pensacola, you had an inner city, No. Everyone has their own unique challenges. We did this at two different locations. I will tell you, just like hardwiring excellence, just like high reliability, those things done well are transferable.
Well, and what you've done is you've taken all these things, and that's, again, why I wrote the book, Rewiring. It wasn't saying, here's how to rewire. It's just saying, don't be afraid to challenge the status quo. Don't be afraid to put in new things, because you can always go back if it doesn't work. And you've done that with the discharge. You've done it with the communication that you've done through the, being able to use a portal to say, I need a blanket, I need some water, or even what room should I be in? I was recently in a center, and you know, it was a big center, and I was getting an exam, and it was huge, and they sort of told me where to go, and within a second I got a little text that reminded me I'm supposed to be in waiting room B.
Yeah.
And, you know, that helped. I didn't have to go up and ask anyone where I was supposed to be. And I guess it's the kind of, what you've done such a nice job of is using technology, but also keeping the personal relationships going. So yeah. You've married technology and relationships and taken what could be considered transactional leadership. You've really continued to make it relationship and personal leadership.
Well, technology, I will tell you, the reason why that worked well is because we had a really good partner that adapted to the feedback of the operations team, and the operations team owned this. IT didn't own this. This was our request for things that really made a difference, that took work off the plate of some of our caregivers and really added benefit to the patient. So we still, every quarter, even I still meet with this vendor every quarter, and we tweak up that with the clinical leadership, and we keep on pushing the envelope on that piece. So if anyone contacts me, I'll get them connected with that vendor, or we'll talk to them about the core components of that maybe they can work with their vendor on challenging them to do some of these things.
Well, Mark, you're a just wonderful leader, and I'm again in awe of you. I want to be like Mark Slide or something. You're a way better leader than I've ever been.
To hear that from Quint Studer is high praise. Thank you. Thank you very much. You don't know what that means to me. I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you. And thank you, listeners, for this listening to this edition of the Healthcare Plus podcast. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Healthcare Plus podcast hosted by Quint Studer and Dan Collard. For more free resources and to access latest books, articles, and industry insights, visit www.healthcareplussg.com. Plus, for a limited time, visit our website to download a free copy of Rewiring Excellence, written by Quint Studer and Dan Collard. We hope you'll join us next time as we continue the journey to make healthcare better for caregivers, patients, and communities.